I tried to ask him again. After we'd long left behind the canyons and the rising dunes that surrounded them. But again he shut me down, urging his horse on. The night was dark, and I felt lost in the strange and desolate landscape. "Excuse me, but..."
"No talking."
My frustration broke through. "Why no talking when we're so far out of earshot now?"
"Because it's my horse, and I'm the one who rescued you. Or would you prefer to run back into their arms?"
"At least they told me who they are."
"You say nothing." "And who are they?"
"Horde, riding with Jacob, son of Kurang." He jerked his reins back and brought the mount to a stamping halt.
"Son of Kurang, you say? You're sure?"
"Of course I'm sure. Why?" Samuel stared into the night, face set, then at me, as if considering his options. "You're a fool if you think you can kill them on your own," I said, surprised by my nerve. "They're over 50, some of them twice your size."
"They would all be dead by now if not for you."
A deep bitterness laced his voice, the kind of hatred that is blind to all but darkness.
"I've been tracking the throaters for 2 days, and could have blocked their way out of the canyon to pick them off one by one. I had them."
He spat to one side.
"Then you shouldn't have bothered with me,"
I bit off. He took a deep breath and settled his temper.
"No horde is worth the life of another albino. But why didn't you tell me the son of Kurang was their leader?"
"Because you refused to let me talk."
And now he slipped my grasp.
"I doubt he's going anywhere." Samuel eyed me doubtfully.
"You're only an albino to them. Or have you forgotten that as well?"
"I'm not just a thing you call albino. I actually have a name. It's Rochelle. And I'm an Elianite from beyond the Great Divide. Thank you for asking. Bael, the Horde's high priest, gave me a poison that took my memories. Jacob was sent to bring me back, and I doubt he's willing to accept failure. Please treat me with some respect." He eyed me with fresh interest. "Do you know who Thomas of Hunter is?" I asked.
"My father. You're saying that the Elianites actually exist? How can you be sure, if the Horde poisoned your memory?"
"The Roush told me I was, and..."
"Roush? You've seen the Roush?"
"So they're real?"
"You ask? You just said they spoke to you."
"Yes, but for all I know, I was hallucinating. Though I doubted that. But yes, two white, Ewok-looking creatures found me on the sands, one called Gabil and the other Mikal."
"Ewok?"
"You know, Star Wars," I nearly said, but then I remembered where I was, or more correctly, where I wasn't. "Just a word meaning a fuzzy little creature about 2 feet tall," I said. His right brow arched.
"No one has seen the Roush for decades. You probably imagined it based on the stories."
"No, that would be my dreams of another life. I didn't imagine the Horde, did I?"
"What other life?"
I hesitated. "A town called Eden. The Roush told me I was dreaming of ancient Earth." Samuel studied me in the dark for a long moment, then turned and nudged his horse into a trot. "Can you at least tell me where you're taking me?" I asked.
"To a safe place where I can think."
His tone had shifted. If nothing else, I had managed to fill him with curiosity. After a few minutes, that curiosity got the better of him.
"My father, Thomas of Hunter, claims that half of what he knows came from dreams of ancient Earth,"
he began in a soft voice. Then he told me much more about his father, and I let him talk without interrupting. "He told me how Thomas had entered dreams of ancient Earth and saved humanity from a deadly virus called the Risen Strain, but at considerable cost. His actions changed the course of history, something Samuel couldn't quite fathom. My mind spun. I, along with every living soul on Earth, knew of the Ryzen strain, an airborne virus that would have killed most of the world's population if not for a man named Thomas Hunter. That Thomas Hunter was this Thomas of Hunter? Samuel told me that, according to his father, every time he fell asleep in this world, he woke up in ancient Earth, and vice versa. Until a few years ago, the only way not to dream of the ancient history was to eat a fruit called the rambutan, which kept him dreamless and sane, tethered to this world. But the gateway had been closed. The crossing between worlds was no longer possible. All of this, according to Thomas. Rambutan. It was the fruit the Rausch had mentioned. And Thomas was wrong, because I was crossing between worlds. Me, the 49th. Could it be? But I let Samuel go on, filling in many details of his father's dreams. He clearly wasn't convinced about any of it. But the more he talked, the more I knew I had to speak to Thomas. He had experienced what I was experiencing. Maybe Thomas was the helper Justin had promised me. "Where is your father now?" I asked. He told me. They had all been Horde many years ago. But Justin had made a way for the scabbing disease to be healed. A scab, meaning one of the Horde, had only to drown in one of the Red Lakes to emerge albino, free of disease. The Horde, who served their god, Chile, and his high priest, Bael, despised the Red Lakes and hunted all albinos like dogs. They believed albinos had been poisoned by the Red Lakes and lost their minds. From a scab's perspective, albino was a disease. Kurong, ruler of all Horde, had vowed to exterminate all trace of them from the earth. So albinos had formed an alliance called the Circle, led by Thomas. They numbered roughly 3,000 and were scattered among 4 nomadic tribes. Nomadic because, as pacifists who were prohibited from defending or attacking, they could only run. Samuel's biting tone showed his disdain for the nonviolence. There was clearly division in their ranks. "You hate your own people," I said. "Do you also hate your father?" He didn't answer right away. "We disagree," he said quietly. "The Horde killed my love, Anya, 2 years ago, a week before our wedding. I found her body butchered and strapped to a pole on a cliff. My father speaks of forgiveness, and I tried." Samuel spat. "If he knew how deep my anger runs, he would probably confine me to quarters."
"Maybe he does know."
"Perhaps. But there's more than the death of Anya. My father's wife, Chalice, was once Horde, daughter of Kurong. Whenever I see her now, my stomach turns."
"So you hate your mother as well? I can't imagine."
"She is not my mother. I was born to Thomas's first wife, who also was killed by the Horde many years ago. So you see, there is too much for me to forgive."
I felt only compassion for Samuel in that moment. "I'm sorry for your loss," I said. "I lost my mother as well, but I can't imagine the pain of finding someone you love like that."
The horse snorted and plowed on. "What was your mother's name?" he asked.
"Rochelle. My father named me after her. My father in my dream world, that is. Here, I don't know."
He twisted back. "Rochelle, you say?"
"Yes. Why?"
He faced the dunes again. "My mother's name was also Rochelle."
I didn't know what to make of that coincidence. By his silence, I guessed he didn't either. "How many Horde are there?" I asked after several long moments.
Too many to count. Millions among seven forests. Surely this comes back to you now with my recounting.
I thought about it. No. After a gentle grunt, he told me more. The albinos were like dogs trapped in canyons, waiting for Justin to return and save them before they were slaughtered. In the meantime, they were lost in a wasteland of darkness, fearing the horde. Slaves to fear, he said. And they were, I thought, saved in a world to come. But slaves to the fears of this world, just as Justin had said. So then, what's the advantage of drowning and becoming albino? I asked him. Because one day the horde will be slaughtered by Elyon while we enter paradise. The story was familiar to me. Not here, but in Eden.
I think that might be true, I said.
He shrugged and looked up at the starry sky. I've seen no evidence of this paradise for many years. Children will believe anything, but there comes a time to grow up.
But it's coming, right? I think that's the point. One day you'll be saved. Simon...
I stopped, realizing details from the other world would only confuse him. Simon?
Someone from my dreams. Never mind.
Your dreams? Yes, of course. Well, whatever you do, don't bring anyone back with you. Terrible people have crossed over before, if I'm to believe the stories.
Maybe you should. I'm living proof.
Yes, well, as I said, my father says the gate between worlds is closed, regardless.
Are you deaf? You think I'm just making this all up? I've been there. I am there.
We rode in silence for a full minute as he chewed on my claim. Then tell me, Rochelle. Tell me how it's possible that you live in the histories and that I, flesh and blood, am only a part of your dream.
You're not just part of my dream. You're real, like me. But don't ask me how it works because I don't understand it myself. He grunted.
Then at least amuse me with your knowledge of the histories.
So I told him. I pretended that I was in Eden, only dreaming, and I explained to him the whole world as I knew it. He went along with it, asking me questions with more than a touch of skepticism. How did planes fly? How could power travel through metal strings in a grid that powered contraptions a long way off? How could voices be heard on a phone object when it wasn't connected to these wires? What was the internet? What was an atomic weapon? I offered simple explanations and left out details that would only raise additional questions. The sun rose in the east as we talked, Samuel lost in my story of an impossible world, I lost in this one. But I couldn't dismiss the powerful horse beneath me, nor Samuel's body, which I clung to, the heat of the desert as the sun climbed the horizon, the musky scent of his sweat, the creak of the saddle and tackle, the beating of my heart and his, all real. I can't say he believed much of anything I said, only that with each passing mile his tone grew warmer and his questions less confrontational. I decided Samuel was a child at heart, full of bravado and more questions than answers. The sun was directly above us when we reached a small grove of trees near a watering hole hidden in canyons. How far is your tribe? I asked as he brought his horse to a stop.
Another day's ride north and east.
He slipped off, dropped to the sand, and offered me a hand.
But we spend the night here. I need to think.
Think about what?
He lowered his arm. His bright green eyes captivated me. I couldn't say why. Maybe because we were about the same age, and our time together on the horse had been the first time in any world that I'd been in such close proximity to a man for so long. Maybe because he had saved me from certain death, and I saw him as a kind of savior. "Think about you," he said. There's no denying you're the greatest mystery ever to have fallen into my lap.
I looked back the way we had come. How can you be sure they won't find us here?
If they do, my father might excuse me for cutting them down to protect a dreamer like him.
They're 50. You're 1.
True, but they won't come. It'll take them a day to find our tracks, if they're lucky. The wind has been at our backs, so they haven't been able to follow our scent.
I don't know. They seemed pretty good.
Have no fear, he said, effortlessly withdrawing one of 2 long knives strapped to his thighs, twirling the blade in his fingers like a drumstick. Unlike my father, I live by the sword. The old ways of the forest guard still live in me, and those I lead. I swear to you, not a hair on your beautiful head will be harmed, as long as Samuel of Hunter watches over you.
He winked at me, dropped the knife back into its sheath, and extended his hand again. I tried not to smile, but my mouth wasn't paying attention to my mind. I took his hand, swung from Razor, and dropped down next to him. "The water's safe to drink?" I asked, watching the horse amble toward the pool 10 paces ahead. No response. I turned to face him and saw that his eyes were fixed on my shoulder, my circle tattoo.
"Where did you get that?"
he asked. "I don't know. The Rausch said it marks me as an Elianite, a mystic." He slowly reached for my shoulder and traced the thin line with his finger.
A mystic? Could it be true?
Everything I told you is true, I said, aware of his flesh on mine. His eyes were full of wonder.
No one has ever seen an Elianite, much less a mystic. A race of albinos marked by a single circle, who supposedly live beyond the Great Divide. It is said mystics can wield the sword like no other.
How could I respond to that? I don't know about wielding a sword. The Rausch only said I'm a mystic, the 49th.
I might as well have dropped a bomb. The 49th mystic?
Yes, evidently.
And the prophecy,
he said, hands still on my shoulder.
The Rausch said that was true as well.
What prophecy?
A child will be born among us, the 49th mystic,
he quickly recited,
and she will divide to expose the shadow of death. Then the lion will lie down with the lamb.
That's what Justin said. His hand fell from my shoulder.
Justin?
That's who he said he was. Justin.
You're saying you've seen Justin? That he talked to you?
When? Just before the Horde came.
Why didn't you tell me this?
Didn't I? You weren't exactly listening to...
What did he say?
He demanded. I nearly told him about the 5 seals, but then I remembered that they were my personal journey, and that I had to find them before the appointed time. But what was the appointed time? He said I would bring the world to a point of great crisis. I hesitated, thinking my charge sounded absurd, then said it anyway. I've been chosen to lead the way out of darkness and fear in this life. Assuming I can find that way before the appointed time myself.
He said that to you?
He paced, lost in thought.
Then he speaks of my people. Albinos, clean on the outside, but mastered by fear still.
But I don't see how.
The lion will lie down with the lamb can only mean that the Horde will be crushed, he said, turning back. What else did he say?
I hesitated, thinking. My memory of the words was like a dream fogged by time. That my journey would cost me everything.
not with me by your side. No harm will come to you under my charge. I swear it. What else?
That he would send me a helper.
And here I am. What else? Anything about the books of history?
No. What books?
Ancient volumes that record all truth as experienced in all of history. My father claims they allowed others to cross between realities before the gateway was closed.
I thought you didn't believe in...
That was before. How can I deny what my eyes show me? The gateway has been opened by you. The 49th. Only you. It must be.
The books are the gateway? I asked. But I don't have a book.
Blood makes them a gateway, my father says. It's also rumored that whatever's written in them by a believing soul manifests in reality. The gateway is supposed to be closed, but it would make sense that you, the 49th, might open that gateway. You're from ancient Earth, right? So it must be.
If this is true, why now? I asked, speaking as much to myself as to him. And why am I younger there and older here?
You are?
Yes.
He shrugged, undeterred. These are mysteries to be discovered. After all, you are a mystic, yes?
I wasn't sure what to make of it all. Samuel, on the other hand, had suddenly become a true believer. He grabbed my hand and tugged me toward several large boulders in the shade.
Tell me more.
I've already told you everything. He released my hand, rushed over to the horse, and quickly untied a leather bag of water and a satchel of food affixed to the saddle.
Tell me again, he said, hurrying back. That circle on your arm.
He motioned to my arm with his chin.
Is the first real evidence that speaks to more than we know. If the Elianites do exist, then there are more than a few thousand albinos alive to form an army against the Horde. I, Samuel of Hunter, will know what you know. All of it.
Chapter 9. There wasn't much more to tell Samuel, but this time he hung on my every word, so it felt like I was telling him for the first time. I told him every detail from the moment I first woke up in the desert, again leaving out the part about the 5 seals. Somehow that felt private to me, like a treasure I was to seek for myself. And then I told him again as we chewed on strips of dried jerky and ate stale kabush bread harvested from a desert grain. We washed it all down with sweet water from the oasis. And still again, as he paced, hands running through his hair. As the hours passed, the doubter in him yielded to a deep seed of hope that had taken root and sprung up. He told me wild tales of a time not so long ago, when his father was a young man, when all evil had been contained in a forbidden forest. All humans had lived innocently, without the knowledge of either good or evil, because everything was wildly perfect. They lived in a village near a lake at the base of a colored waterfall. The powerful waters filled all who drank with intoxicating wonder. But then Tanis, first born among them, was seduced by Tile and crossed into the forbidden forest. Tanis ate Tile's fruit, thereby opening the way for evil to flood the land. The Shataiki, Tile's creatures, infected all with the scabbing disease. It was said that Tile himself, like his queens, was much larger than those vile beings, but even one of them could tear through 12 men and leave them in shreds. Justin drowned to create a way to be free of the disease, but fear ruled the hearts of men nonetheless. I couldn't help but see how this world's history mirrored the history of my dream world, ancient Earth, the world of Eden, Utah. But by Samuel's recounting, the entire history from Tanis until now transpired in less than 40 years. I found it fascinating. If the Shataiki can kill, why haven't they just killed all humans? I asked, thinking of the wounds suffered by the plump Roush, Gabil. Who would they inflict their fear upon? Who would they rule? They keep the Horde as their prize. He paused. Or perhaps they can only influence. Or, more likely, they don't exist anymore.
Influence. I couldn't help thinking of Shadow Man. According to him, my nightmares were only a foreshadow, which is why I called him Shadow Man.
A deep dread spread through my bones, and yet, what if he could only influence? What if he couldn't take life himself? He hadn't killed me. Maybe his only influence was fear through his accusations and threats. What was I thinking? Of course he couldn't kill me. He was only part of my nightmares.
You've never seen these Shataiki? I asked. Not even as a child?
Perhaps, he frowned. I can't remember. All memory of those times is like a fog to me. But I do suppose they once existed. No one has seen the Shataiki since then.
He eyed me curiously.
Have you?
No.
And yet you've seen Roush.
So you believe me?
He was seated on a boulder under the shade of a large palm, one foot planted on the sand. His eyes were daring, and everything in his tone told me that he did believe. But I wanted to hear him say it, if only to support my belief.
Of course I believe you,
Samuel said, rising. He walked toward Razor, his horse, who was feeding on soft reeds on the pool's bank.
I believe in the woman named after my own mother, who has come to me out of a dream.
He turned, walking backward with arms spread now.
For all I know, this is my dream, and you're the maiden I've called to rescue me from myself.
He flashed a grin and let his statement stand for a moment. Then he turned to the horse, jerked two swords from their scabbards on either side of the saddle, and faced me, blades hanging from each hand. He walked toward me.
And if the rumors of Elianites really are true, then all of them must be true, wouldn't you say?
Not necessarily.
Including the rumor that among Elianites, the mystics are second to none in the fighting arts, also called the Roush arts.
He stopped 10 feet away.
Show me.
With that, Samuel of Hunter tossed the blade in his left hand toward me. But I wasn't a warrior. I had no idea what to do with a sword. So I simply watched the blade sail past me, clatter against a large boulder, and land in the sand at my feet. I looked over at him.
I told you, I have no clue how to hold that thing, much less swing it.
No, of course you don't. You've lost your memory. And without memory of who you are, you can't be who you are. This much is obvious, even to a child. But that doesn't mean you can't recover the memory of who you are.
Justin's words came to me.
Remember who you are. Recognize yourself.
Maybe, but I can tell you...
You didn't even reach for it. How do you know you can't wield it?
I heard a rustle in the tree and glanced up. There, perched on a limb, was the plump Roush. Gabil, the one with a limp.
What is it?
Samuel had followed my stare and was looking directly at the Roush.
The southern breeze. It still carries our scent north, away from the Horde, who are still far south. Trust me when I say we albinos know how to remain hidden.
Gabil fluttered down and landed on a boulder just behind Samuel. He was grinning in a sneaky way, as if having played some great joke. I stared, trying not to look too astonished at what Samuel couldn't see.
It is I, and I alone,
Gabil said to me,
and I must remain at a distance. I'm not to meddle. Do you think this counts as meddling?
Humor me, Samuel was saying, focused on me again.
Humor him,
Gabil said, hopping down to the sand, where he nearly stumbled before righting himself.
Show him the move I showed you before Justin came.
Gabil was real. Yes, of course he was, and always had been. I knew that. I also knew that I couldn't speak to him without appearing foolish to Samuel.
Don't look so shocked, Samuel said, approaching. My logic is sound. If you really are one of these mystics and have just lost your memory, then I want to see if I can help you recover the most important part, which is the memory of wielding a sword.
He reached for my hand, and I gave it to him without thinking. Before I realized his intention, he'd pulled me up, spun me around so that he was at my back, and had his arm around me, sword extended in front of me.
Take it, he whispered in my ear. I'll guide you.
Let him guide you, Gabil said, behind me now. This is Samuel, son of Thomas, as worthy a companion as any. And he does know the arts, I must say. I don't think I'm meddling when I say take the blade. Do you?
Only a part of my mind was engaged with Samuel, his one arm snug around my waist, the other extended before me holding the sword, his breath on my ear and the pounding of his heart against my back. These were all things my senses, heightened by years of blindness, registered in full. But most of my mind was racing with questions for Gabil. The seals, my identity, my quest, the dreams. Surely he would have insight. Samuel reached all the way around me with his free arm, gently lifted my hand alongside the blade, then folded my fingers around the hilt.
You see, he said, just like this. You remember the feel of the well-heeled leather hilt in your hand, begging you to join in. Albinos may not use the blade to kill Horde these days, but even children are trained in the arts. Think of your relationship with a sword as you would a courtship ritual, and remember that, as an Elianite, you are among the best skilled in these arts.
I only half heard his words, because Gabil was hopping around us and now faced me again, just there, 10 feet in front of me, grinning with delight.
It's true, he said. As a mystic from beyond the pass, you must have been very skilled in all the arts. Go on, play with him.
Play? It was all a big game to these two. To make it certain, Gabil leaped in the air, executed 2 slicing swipes with his feet, and landed in a pile. He quickly righted himself.
Sorry. Maneuvering on the ground isn't exactly my forte, but it is yours.
Oblivious to the roush, Samuel slowly removed his hand from mine and stepped around me, eyes bright. In doing so, his leg passed through Gabil's wing as if it wasn't there at all. Still, the roush quickly got out of the way.
Go on,
Samuel said, scooping up the sword he'd thrown past me moments earlier.
Like this.
He slowly weaved the blade side to side.
Remember?
He effortlessly twirled it through a full circle once, then twice, without removing his eyes from mine.
Let it come back to you. Show me that the young maiden from the other side of the world is as skillful as she is beautiful.
Show him,
Gabil cried, swaying and bobbing his head. Wearing half a smile and feeling silly, I moved my arm, felt the weight of the heavy sword, still utterly clueless.
Like this?
Samuel's smile softened.
No, not like that.
The late afternoon air grew still. Without warning, he sprang forward, spun once in the air, and brought his blade about in a wide, slashing arc directed at my chest. I can't say how what happened next did, because I wasn't thinking. I only reacted, dropping to a crouch and jerking my own blade up to intersect the path of his. The clash of metal on metal rang out in the canyon.
"Like that," Samuel said. He was over me, his blade pressing against mine as if frozen in time. For a moment we just stared at each other, he as shocked as I.
"You could have killed me."
His eyes flashed. I would have pulled short.
"I knew it," Gabil cried, flipping through the air, swiping his wings like blades. "I knew it. All Elianites are..."
I lost the rest of what he said, because Samuel was moving again, swinging his blade through a reverse arc. I easily blocked this blow as well, and the next, a roundhouse kick with his right leg, and then the knife he palmed from his thigh and sent my way with enough force to cut through any breastbone. The last I slapped away with the back of my hand, but not without feeling the sharp pain in my knuckles.
"Stop it," I cried, dropping my blade and running back a few steps. "What do you think you're doing?"
He stood up straight, confused.
"Sparring."
"With real blades? What if I'd missed that knife?"
"It was headed past your right shoulder. I would never actually harm you."
"I don't know what I'm doing."
But I did know. I was blocking his blows without any conscious control. And that frightened me. Samuel looked at me, dejected.
"Forgive me. I wanted to shock it out of you. You know, force your instincts to kick in."
He shrugged.
"It worked. Which means you have me hilt, blade, and scabbard. You're far more skilled than I could have hoped, and we've only just begun."
He dipped his head.
"I will follow you to the ends of the earth."
"Because I can fight?"
"Heavens, no. But it is a part of who you are. Like your beauty, and like the mark on your arm. Is there any doubt that I was summoned to your side?"
I noticed the odor of burning acid then, just a hint on the breeze, but enough for me to spin around and scan the canyons. Nothing.
"What is it?"
Samuel asked. This was different from the scent of Horde, I thought. Then it was gone. A flurry of wings behind me spun me back. Gabil was making for the sky in haste. No meddling.
"What are you looking at?"
Samuel asked, gazing about.
"I thought I smelled something."
He tested the air.
"Nothing. I told you we were safe here. Yes, Jacob is rumored to be good, but no Horde is that good."
He stepped up to the blade I dropped and scooped it up.
"No more knives, I promise. Just swords. Maybe you can teach me a thing or two."
The stench returned, this time full force, as if a blanket of it had been dropped over us. I jerked my eyes up and saw them. Thousands of them. Settling on the cliffs above us, large black creatures with glowing red eyes, like hooded serpents with wings. I froze, breathless. These had to be Shiitake. We were surrounded by them. Samuel was by my side, staring up unseeing. But my reaction had his full attention now.
"What do you see?"
"Shiitake," I whispered.
But I was thinking, Shadow Man. He slowly turned, face white, searching the cliffs.
"How many?"
"Thousands. We have to leave."
"You're sure they're real? It's not just a figment."
"They're as real as you. Trust me."
I was trembling.
"We have to run."
"Calm down," he said, but his voice was tight with fear. "I'm positive they can't hurt us."
"I'm not."
"They can only make you afraid."
"I don't care. We still have to leave. We're trapped in this canyon. Why would they be here? You're sure you can't see them?"
Samuel set his jaw and looked me over.
"You. They must know who you are."
He nodded once.
"Okay. We leave."
He grabbed my arm and guided me toward the horse, casting furtive glances at the darkening sky,
I have to get you to my father.
The Shiitake were perched high, 100 yards from us. Even at that distance, I felt their power reaching down to smother me. Fear, the kind that works its way deep into a mind and blinds a person to anything but survival. The kind I had felt 1,000 times through 1,000 nightmares. Even as I thought it, one of them leaped from the cliff, followed by 2 others. They circled down toward us, floating on wide black wings tattered from abuse, the air filled with distant hissing and clicking, the sound of swarming locusts. I hurried, passing Samuel, but the nearest of the 3 approaching Shiitake veered and settled to the ground between us and the horse. I pulled up. The Shiitake had a long snout with bared fangs, a snapping tail, and beady, pupil-less eyes. He was like a rabid fruit bat, or a cobra. The wings, its hood. What?
They're on the ground, I whispered, between us and the horse.
Samuel stepped up next to me.
Razor doesn't notice.
I do.
The creature sprang into the air, flapped for us, and landed on Samuel's shoulder, red eyes fixed on me.
It's on you,
I cried, jumping away.
What's on me?
Samuel faced me, frowning. He swiped at his shoulders, but his hand went through the creature.
You're saying a Shiitake is on me? I don't feel a thing.
The Shiitake's jaw opened, hissing. Its fangs locked onto Samuel's head, and a long pink tongue snaked into his ear, all the way in. Fear washed through me like acid.
Don't move,
I rasped. My heart was hammering, and my palms were sweating.
What do you mean, don't move?
He batted at the air. Enough with this. We ride. He went still. The Shiitake took flight with a clicking hiss that cut to my heart. Samuel stood frozen for a moment, then dropped to all 4s and pressed his ear against the sand. And as he did, I heard the pounding hooves beyond the hissing of the Shiitake.
Horde,
he growled, standing. A dark glare drenched with bitterness transformed Samuel's face. The hosts, perched on the cliffs above us, rose like a blanket of flies from a carcass. They swooped to the canyon's entrance, where they hovered over rising dust from the desert.
Follow!
Samuel sprinted for his horse, which was now stamping and snorting. I followed. He reached back, hoisted me by the waist, and threw me onto the horse. Snatching the reins, he swung under the mount's neck like a tether ball, and landed on the saddle in front of me. He shoved a sword into my hand and tugged a bow from its sling behind me.
"We go straight for them," he said, kicking the mount. "Remember, you know how to use that sword. Use it."
Then we were galloping for the wide canyon mouth, straight toward a line of thundering horde mounts, now in clear sight. I didn't understand why we weren't taking the escape route he'd told me about. It was behind us, past the pool at the back of the canyon.
Why this way? We don't stand a chance. Why not?
They'll only follow. We don't have the speed, both on one horse. We need one of theirs. If you see him, tell me which is Jacob.
I understood his logic concerning the horses, but I didn't understand his recklessness in also taking a swipe at Jacob while the opportunity presented itself. Our lives were at stake. My life was at stake. They came in a wide line, at least 30 abreast, and we, just one horse with both of us bent forward, blazing for certain disaster.
Samuel!
I was lost to panic. We can't do this!
We are doing this. I take the left, you take the right. Go for the head.
Still they came. Still my heart pounded. Still my mind screamed its warning of imminent death. The Shiitake hovered above the warriors, a wall of black against the graying sky. I forced my eyes back to the horde.
Like a Shiitake out of hell, Razor,
Samuel said. Then he released the reins, strung his bow with an arrow from the quiver at his knees, pulled the string back at a full gallop, and let the arrow fly. I watched its trajectory, rising at a 30-degree angle, sailing through a lazy arc, heading back down toward the line of horses. We were closing fast, fewer than 100 paces now, and yet Samuel's arrow reached one of the warriors at precisely the right point. The scab grabbed at his neck and tumbled backward off his mount.
"You see him?"
"Who?"
"Jacob. We have to kill Jacob."
"We have to escape."
He'd lost his mind, I thought. The shiitake had poisoned him with its tongue. How could anyone be so headstrong? Or he knew something I didn't about their ways. I prayed it was the latter. Samuel shot another arrow, took the warrior next to his first victim from his mount, then a third. My scattered thoughts finally made sense of what he was doing when he veered for the narrow gap he'd created.
"Take the one on the right."
The calculating frontal lobe of my brain shut down when we were 10 strides from them. Panic gave way to raw survival instinct. I wasn't aware of what I was doing. I just did it. Gripping Samuel's leather breastplate with my left hand, I hung down to my right, sword nearly dragging on the ground, light in my hand. Then we were on top of the horde warrior. I didn't see his face. His blade swung from Samuel at the same time mine cut deep into the mount's foreleg. Samuel easily ducked the slicing blade. The scab's horse had no such opportunity. It snorted in pain and collapsed full stride in our wake.
"That's my girl."
Samuel continued in a full gallop, pulling Razor to the right in pursuit of one of the riderless stallions.
"You see him?"
I didn't bother answering. We drew abreast of the horse as the warriors behind us doubled back.
"Take Razor. If we get separated, he'll take you to Thomas. There are 4 knives strapped to the saddle. One more pass, and if you see Jacob, gut him."
Then he was off, and straddling a terrified black mount, which he struggled to control. I, on the other hand, had no such problem with Razor. My body knew what to do. I shifted forward, grabbed the reins with my left hand, and dug my feet into the stirrups, close on Samuel's heels. It took only 12 strides for the horde stallion to know he had a new master. Samuel reined him high and abruptly pulled him around. Our eyes met and held for a moment. Then he dipped his head with respect, spurred his horse, and tore back the way we had come. We'd covered half the distance to the horde when I realized that they were waiting for us. They had no desire to repeat the first pass. Did they know about the passage out the back? No. Jacob intended to trap us in the canyon if we got past them this time. It occurred to me that the knives were far more useful to me than the sword. Why? Because I was better with the smaller blades. I quickly shoved the sword into its scabbard and palmed 2 of the 4 knives strapped to Razor's shoulders. One went between my teeth, the other in my right hand. Samuel had already taken down 2 of the horde with arrows before I threw my first knife. I watched it fly true, end over end, before slamming home in a warrior's chest. Heavier than an arrow, the blade sliced cleanly through his leather armor. He was likely dead before he hit the ground. I was low and ready to hurl the second knife when one of the warriors to my left veered toward me.
"No harm to the woman," he thundered. "Let them pass."
It was Jacob. I knew his voice. He'd seen my skill with a knife and surely knew that I would make him my next target. Yet this didn't seem to bother him. Why?
"If you see Jacob, gut him."
How could I kill this man I had spoken to, negotiated with? It wasn't in me. And yet, this was my course, wasn't it? I snatched the knife from my mouth, drew back, and sent it with all of my strength. But before the hilt left my hand, I flinched. The blade flew true, but my true was now 1 foot to Jacob's right. It didn't matter. He snatched the blade from the air with a gloved hand, as if it were a feather. And I knew then why Jacob had been chosen to hunt me down. This was no ordinary warrior. Our eyes met as I raced by and broke through the gap Samuel had made. There was curiosity in those eyes, not malice or anger. Even if I could have killed him, I was glad I hadn't tried.
"That was him?"
Samuel yelled over his shoulder.
"I missed."
He cursed, but Samuel was no fool. We now had two fast horses and an escape route the horde knew nothing about. The Shiitake were screeching above us, but I was bent low over Razor's neck and refused to look up. Samuel led us at a full gallop past the pool and the trees nestled around it. I followed him wordlessly as he angled for one of the two narrow passages at the end of the canyon. We entered before the horde rounded the trees, but they would still be able to follow our tracks while there was light. This fact was worrying me when Samuel abruptly turned and took his mount up a steep, rocky incline. Razor followed, struggling for footing. I saw why Samuel had been so reluctant to try with two on the horse's back. And yet the horde would know we'd cut up the incline. We quickly reached the rocky canyon lip.
"This way."
Samuel took us 100 yards on flat stone, then guided his mount down a narrow chasm that led back to the canyon floor. To my reckoning, we were headed back in the same direction we had come. Madness. But I'd learned not to second-guess Samuel. He stopped at the end of the passageway, looked around its edge, then led us back into the same oasis we'd come from. This time we headed for the second of the two passages that led out the back. The horde would eventually figure out what we'd done, but by then we'd be long gone on two fast horses. I pulled up next to him and saw his wide grin.
"Never doubt Samuel of Hunter," he said. "Can you go without sleep?"
"If I have to."
The night was suddenly and eerily quiet. I glanced at the sky. The Shiitake were gone.
Why?
We passed the trees surrounding the oasis at a steady trot.
"Then we'll join Thomas and my tribe by sunrise."
The horde was behind us, headed in the wrong direction. The Shiitake had left us alone. But something else in the gathering night had my attention. The air seemed to be charged. I could feel it at the nape of my neck. Samuel saw him first, just as we rounded the pool, and he reined his mount to a halt. A lone rider sat on a pale stallion, calmly watching us. He was dressed in a light robe and wore sandals rather than boots. His hair was white, and his beard was long. Two braids held his hair off his face and swept back over his ears. Next to him stood a second riderless mount, a black mare.
"Albino,"
Samuel said, staring.
"Is he alone?"
"I don't know."
He nudged his horse forward, and I followed. The rider showed no concern. Where had he come from? Samuel pulled up 5 paces from him and studied his horse, his robe, his face.
"Are you alone?"
he asked.
"There are 2 others here,"
the man said in a strong, gentle voice. Samuel scanned the perimeter.
"They sit on horses before me,"
the man said.
He was speaking of us.
"I see,"
Samuel said.
"And who are you?"
"Do you ask for my identity, or what they call me?"
"Let's start with what they call you."
"They call me Talia, a mystic from beyond the Great Divide."
His eyes shifted to me.
"And I've come to take the one you call the Lamb back."
"The Lamb?"
"Rochelle. The meaning of the word is Lamb."
Samuel eyed him carefully.
"Take her back where?"
The man called Talia hesitated.
"Home," he said.
"Don't be absurd,"
Samuel snapped. I take her to Thomas. Any albino in this desert is under his jurisdiction. Rochelle now belongs to us.
Her name is not Rochelle, and she belongs to no one on this plane. She was raised by mystics, who were pushed out by other Elianites. 3 months ago, she was taken by the Horde and delivered to Bael's dungeons.
This Talia was the helper Justin had promised me? I wanted to know more, much more.
Mystic, you say? Samuel wasn't eager to buy into Talia's claims. I know what Horde are, who Rochelle is. Who are you to call yourself a mystic that I should even consider trusting you?
A mystic is only one who believes that Elion is infinite, not subject to polarity.
Polarity? What is this nonsense? Of course Elion is infinite. All albinos know this. Does it make us all mystics, then?
How little you know, Samuel of Hunter,
Talia said gently.
I will take the 49th, as is my charge.
Samuel sat on his horse, face blank, but before he could speak, a beast came out of the boulders behind him. A lion.
As surprised as I was to see a full-grown lion slinking up to us, I felt no fear.
Samuel uttered a grunt and jerked back.
"This is my lion," the old man said. "He is called Judah. You have nothing to fear from him."
The lion settled down on his belly and yawned wide. Talia's mount stepped forward as if guided by the man's thought.
"You will not follow us. You will not harm Jacob. You will not gather an army. You will not cross the divide. You will do absolutely nothing but stay alive as long as you can. Do you understand?"
"I..." Samuel glanced at me.
"No,
that can't be right. I only..."
"I know you're taken with her. I don't blame you. But a great crisis approaches, like a dark storm. If the 49th succeeds, and if both of you survive what is to come, you can try to woo her all you like, though I assure you she has a mind of her own. Until then, we have far more pressing matters to consider."
It was from Talia the Shataiki had fled, I thought. He was the one who would help me on the quest. My journey would cost me everything, Justin had said. I wondered briefly what that could mean. A chill washed down my neck.
"I should at least come with you," Samuel said. "You do know that I saved her from certain death." "Go home, Samuel."
Talia's voice rumbled with an authority that seemed to reach into my chest and squeeze my heart. The air felt electric again. What power Talia possessed, I didn't know. But I did know I had to follow him.
"Doesn't she get a say in this?"
Samuel demanded, face dark. "Or is she just a pawn?" Talia steadied me, then slowly dipped his head.
"As your servant, I would be remiss if I didn't inform you that should you go with Samuel now, your body will die young. Jacob is no fool. If you come with me, your passing from this plane may be delayed. You might complete the tasks of your role. The choice is yours."
I liked the way he talked, the tone of his voice, his odd choice of words. There was a truth in them that seemed to quicken an ancient knowing in my bones.
"I'll go with you."
"A wise choice."
Talia dipped his head again.
"Jacob has found your tracks and is doubling back. We have to leave now."
As if it could understand, the lion stood, yawned once more, then looked east, ears perked.
"And you, my dear, must dream. Look for the words that point you to the first seal."
"The first seal? You know about my dreams of the other world?"
"We won't be stopping tonight.
You'll have to sleep on your horse.